Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Well, start with the music, I hope. Let's begin with the music. Okay. Well, this is Furl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, today is International Women's Day, and not every woman makes the history books. So I'm going to be talking to various people who I just think deserve. I hope I have no idea what's going on with my radio as to whether, let's see if I can get this again because I want to, this works. Yeah, there we go. All right, this is my
like
opening thing for a reason.
On the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart. Can make an explosion, and all those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. And my power turned on. Starting right now, I'll be strong.
Okay, I got that. So I'm here at New York City. It's 11 a.m. on my time, and it's cold outside, and yeah, cold and cloudy. And anyway, but it doesn't matter because we're going to talk about something great, which is International Women's Day, and we're speaking with Charlotte Tomic. Are you there?
Hi, Merle.
Hi, yeah.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know what happened, what the my computer did.
With the music? Yeah.
What I know. Yeah, because the music automatically goes on. And then I didn't
hear
it. Yeah,
it was on when I dialed in. Yeah, it was on when I dialed in, and then it stopped. I don't know why.
Oh, okay. I have no, okay. They're playing with me. Okay. Anyway,
yeah.
First I want to first introduce yourself to us.
Sure. Hi, I'm Charlotte Tomic, and I'm now living in Florida after a long career in New York. I've been here about 12 years now, and I'm still doing my public relations consulting and also started a second career in real estate.
Being a Gemini,
yes, my head spins all day long.
Yeah, right. Can't have more than one career at a time. So you
right.
go for two? It's two
so
enough?
Go for two.
Is two enough?
Two's
for
enough.
You.
Plus okay. volunteering, you know, so it's like
the volunteering.
Keeping me out of
okay,
trouble.
So we got three. No,
yeah.
That's okay because I tend to go for three also.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I go okay.
Yeah,
I got
not?
That. I got that.
Right.
Now I'm bored.
Right.
I need to do.
Need to do something else, right?
Something else, and everybody always says the same thing to me. Which they probably say to you, and when do you sleep? Right? Am I correct? Did I lose you? Huh. I'm not hearing you. I don't know, maybe like I'm not sure. If you're on your cell phone, it could be that. Or, well, let's try, maybe you should, let's see. Okay, I'm going to, I don't know if even you're hearing me. I'm going to, like, cut you off and now call back in and let's see if that helps. Okay. I don't know what's going on today. You know, I usually, well, sometimes have problems with the computer, you know, or the show or whatever. But I'm hoping not today. Okay. All right. Let's try. Let's try again.
Hi. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I switched to the landline. Maybe my cell phone was a problem.
Okay. Good. Okay. So I was always saying, like, you know, then I get to the, you know, two careers, and then it's like, well, now I'm bored again.
Right.
Find something else.
Find something else. Right.
Yeah. Three is usually my top.
Yeah. It's kind of like being a juggler, you know. You just...
Of course, I don't know if it's. Yeah, I don't know if it's because we were born the same day, same year, but you know we seem to have some things in common.
Something in the
cosmos. Yes. Okay. So, I know you probably thought, how does she remember? I don't know. Maybe because I took S, who the heck knows? But I remembered way back when, you know, back in college days, and you just, you know, when we were coming up with the fact that they were born the same day, you had said you were born in France.
Right, exactly.
Which made a big difference on the time difference.
Right, different time, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why I remembered that. Do you, so what I before I even go to do you, by the way I don't know, I mean I can't recall anything before the age of 5. Do you even
recall
like living
in France?
Yeah.
Actually, I do have memories. I have memories of being on the ship coming over to New York, and I was flirting with the captain of the ship actually as a little. You know, 2.5-year-old. So I remember that. I remember that he was in a uniform, and it was kind of a cute memory.
Well, isn't that funny? Interesting to remember that. But you had, did you even have a sense of why you were going to the United States at that time?
No.
No, you didn't really know.
No, it was kind of
okay.
An adventure, I guess, you know. And actually, my brother was very sick the whole time, and my mother had to kind of hide that from the people because then she thought
right.
they wouldn't let him on the boat and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it was stuff going on behind the scenes that I didn't even know about.
How much older is your brother, by the way?
He's younger.
He's younger?
Like 9 months younger than me.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, I don't want to go into the whole immigration thing. I mean, it's interesting how, because I have, I guess, you know, for me, I'm a second generation. So my grandparents, like, between the four of them, 3 different countries. So, but it's just interesting to hear, you know, when people were coming to this country, there was basically not, you got on a plane as much as you got on a boat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were actually on a military boat that was bringing soldiers back. So it was not like we were on a, you know, some kind of beautiful cruise ship.
Oh, yeah, right.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
It was like being on a, probably on a, you know, a cargo boat or something like that. Less glamorous.
Right. Was it the type of thing? Was a there were a whole? Was it a whole group of people coming over?
Yeah, I guess there must have been a lot of you know, displaced refugees that were being transported after they got visas from relatives in the United States. They were allowed to leave the country where they were before, and come to the States, you know, because they had sponsors to allow them in.
Yeah,
but,
that's,
you know,
that's
they came with nothing, but they were happy to be in freedom.
Now, when in terms of, and
you know,
I'm just curious,
because the French themselves were not very welcoming to immigrants at all at that time. And they were basically dealing with it, and, you know, it would have been very difficult to get citizenship as an immigrant in France, as it is now very difficult for people to immigrate to lots of countries, like Japan has no immigration. You know, lots of other countries have very strict quotas on how many people they let into the country. And that's what creates a lot of the issues. You know, you have to have a sponsor to get there. You have to go through legal channels. You have to have representation. You have to have, you know, the hope for, you know, getting some kind of a job and income. You know, they don't want immigrants to just, you know, seek refuge and become a dependent of the state. So it's very much merit-based in lots of countries, and even so today, it is.
It's interesting. I had remembered hearing, you know, in terms of my grandparents coming over, they were about sponsorship and, you know, things like that, that it wasn't just like, you know, just come here, plop on the land and say, I'm not leaving.
Right. No. And also, my parents were both survivors of concentration camps. So, you know, Jewish organizations were trying to help them either get to Israel or to the United States, you know, where they could live in freedom and not be subjected to anti-Semitism and, you know, things that were still occurring after the war. Discrimination in employment, you know, all those things that took a while to kind of iron out. In post-World War II, Europe and other countries.
Right. I think Workman's Circle was one of the big Jewish organizations.
Which one?
Well,
Workman's Circle.
Are you familiar
with
them?
Yeah, I have heard of them. Yeah, and but I think the ones that that helped the European immigrants were like WEETSO is one and. Then there was a group called B'nai Zion, you know, mostly kind of Jewish Zionist organizations were the ones that were trying to help the survivors as much as they could.
Yeah.
Giving them, you know, finding them housing and giving them some kind of an allowance until they got a job, helping them find a job, things like that.
So let's go to... like, what did, when you got here, like, where did you live?
We lived in Astoria,
New York City.
First,
where did you
in Astoria, Queens, which is a very kind of diverse neighborhood at that time with lots of people from all over Europe. Lots of Italians lived there, Greek people at that time. Not too many Jewish people, to tell you the truth. And when I was in elementary school, I did experience some anti-Semitism among other students because there weren't very many Jews in the school or in the neighborhood, really.
Now it's a very different
kind of, you know, mix of immigrants in Astoria. Lots of people from... you know, all over Pakistan, India, all, you know, there's lots of people from Kazakhstan, and you know, it doesn't resemble what it was when I was growing up anymore. It's very multi-ethnic and diverse now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then at some point, they moved to
Fresh Meadows.
Fresh Meadows, and got a house in Fresh Meadows. You know, when my sister was an infant, they decided they needed more room and moved to a house. Oh, okay. And that's where you stayed until you got an apartment at some point.
So I got an apartment in college, right. I was very precocious in many ways. I couldn't wait to leave my nest and go off on my own, you know, and become very independent. And throughout college, I had my own apartment and commuted from there, you know, to school.
Okay. And so I did, too. Ah, good, I can't leave. I'm good.
Started pretty young, being independent. And of course, I was a, you know, very pro-feminist and anti what was going on with very pro-civil rights movement, and went on marches all over the place, anti-war marches against the Vietnam War and all that stuff. So that was kind of living through that history in those days.
Mm. So back way when they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? What was your answer?
Oh, I always actually wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't get to be a doctor. I changed my major after trying to do organic chemistry. That was it. I just couldn't understand it. It was beyond me.
You and me
and,
both. No, sorry.
And I just said, forget this. You know, so I had a double major, you know, in psychology and in English, and I graduated with a liberal arts degree in both.
I did psychology and communications.
Right. Very funny. Yeah, I thought some of the psychology professors I had were out of their minds. You know, it was like, they didn't want to go into psychology because I said, I don't want to wind up like these guys. They're totally crazy.
That's very funny. I looked around the room
I had one professor at Queens College, actually, who was teaching abnormal psychology. And it was very funny. Completely paranoid individual. He was out of his mind. And I said, how does this guy teach psychology? He should be in a hospital. I used to get to communicate with the students and organize like these little coffee clutches or something in the library. And like me and maybe two other students would show up. You know, no, he was not very popular. And so we'd be sitting in this library, and people were reading their books and reading newspapers and minding their own business and whatever, and he would say to us, don't you feel like you're sitting in a room with one-way mirrors and people are staring at us through these mirrors? And nobody was even looking at us at all in this room, you know? So I looked at the other kids who were in the class with me, and we both kind of rolled our eyes like, you know, And I actually spoke up and I said, no, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't see anyone looking at us.
I want
to say to him, I think that's a little paranoid of you to say that. And he got really angry. He got like all flushed and upset with me. And then I had to drop out of the class.
I took that same course. I don't know if we had the same teacher, though.
I don't know, but whatever. I always said this teacher needed serious help from a psychiatrist, not a psychologist. Meaning he needed medication. Therapy wouldn't do it for him. Anyway. It was funny.
I completely understand. But I looked around my room. I looked around the room in terms of the students, and I went, one of these people I'm going to be a psychologist, a psychiatrist? I said,
yeah,
uh-oh.
Right. We're in trouble. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think some students would major in psychology just to try to help themselves, you know, kind of like a self-help
yes, that's
strategy.
What I thought, too.
That's
so funny. I just took the course for knowledge and credit. You know, that's it. I said, I ain't going to go into this stuff.
Yeah, and then I sort of, you know, decided to stick with English. It was a lot more sane.
Oh, that's funny. So when you, like, what was your first, I guess, career job when you
oh,
left?
My first job was in publishing, actually. I worked for Simon & Schuster. And then I came to learn that working in publishing meant that you should come from a very wealthy family where money doesn't really matter because they pay you slave wages and hope that you're thrilled with the idea of reading and that that's all you need is just books, you know, to read and that you can live on books. But unfortunately, the books didn't buy food, so I paid the rent. Cultivating my mind and doing very well reading manuscripts and recommending books for publishing, I decided, you know, it wasn't going to be a career for me unless I married someone very wealthy. So I left and went into public relations after that, which was not paying much more, but it was at least it was a little bit better than in publishing. And publishing still hasn't matured much since those days, believe it or not. They're still hiring people from Ivy League schools and paying them nothing for the glory of publishing.
After I get off the air, by the way, I'm going to call you and
true,
tell
though.
You some
it really
interesting.
Is true.
Yeah, no, I know, but. After we get off the air, I'm going to call you to tell you some very interesting information that I can't post.
Okay. All right.
Okay. But anyway, in terms of that, did you ever write? And did you ever write anything of your own other than you, or you were basically writing press releases? What were you doing?
Yeah, basically, I was the head of the news division for, you know, the university where I worked, which was St. John's. And I did a lot of, you know, press events, working with all the different departments and the colleges within the university, promoting their faculty and their accomplishments and their research, et cetera, and was, you know, in the administration. So I worked on many special events like the graduation ceremonies and organized and coordinated those. So I wore a lot of different hats when I had that job, but it was a really fun place to work for a long time.
Now, during this all these parts of your career at this point, have you encountered upsets being a female?
Actually, I don't think upsets is the word. I do think that there are, issues of kind of, you know, I won't say of a, I'd say sexual harassment nature in a way that you kind of either have to ignore in those days if you want to keep working where you're working. I think that the Me Too generation is much more open and upfront about it now, and people are taking action and doing things that that hopefully will change that culture.
And in terms of, did you see any discrimination regarding pay? Did you notice any of that?
Well, yeah, you had to kind of always ask for more money, and I think women have been traditionally conditioned not to ask for what they think they deserve. And in publishing, I remember once meeting with the president of the company and trying to get a raise. And he was making at that time what would be considered a fortune today. And he was comparing himself to me and what I was making when I had this negotiation with him. And so I offered to switch salaries, and I told him I would support his family and my family, and he could try to live on my salary. And he didn't really like that idea very much. And he was complaining to me that he had to pay for therapy for his children and that he was having a divorce and he had to pay for a divorce lawyer. And I told him I would pay all those bills, not to worry, if we switch salaries. That's what I thought would be a fair change, you know. I mean, really. And he didn't go for it.
Oh, okay.
So I left not soon after that, because actually it was an interesting time in the history of publishing, because I was involved with a union drive at that time. There was an actual movement to try to create a union in the profession, because everybody said that there's no way that you could fight, you know, the powers that be in terms of getting better salaries and things like that. And as I mentioned to you, nothing much has changed since then. But at the time when there was actually a union drive, I was doing volunteer work with the union people who were very, you know, capable, writing newsletters and trying to educate the workforce about why it would be a benefit to have a union for even professional workers who were in a field that's considered, you know, white collar, not like a factory or something where you have to punch in and punch out and things like that. So it was like at the beginning when unions were trying to organize people working in hospitals and, you know, other fields, that they approached the idea of trying to do the same in publishing. And the president, who I just told you I had this great conversation with about salaries, wound up saying that he was being threatened by the union with violence, and that they were, and that he wasn't going to let that happen, and that he had to hire security and all kinds of stuff. And it was all bullshit. None of that was happening at all. But it scared people about what the union represented, because he was trying to make it look like some kind of mob operation that was intimidating him through violence, which never happened.
Yes.
So, you know, as a result, the people who worked there voted down the union because of his getting out there and saying, I'll take care of you. I'll make sure you all get what you deserve in terms of salary and blah, 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 blah. Of course, none of that ever happened. Yeah, none of that ever happened. And as a result, the union was shot down, and publishing has never gotten a union.
Right. Interesting.
You know, all he had to do was say that there was a threat of violence against him and that he was going to protect his family at all costs and make it sound like the union was intimidating him or doing something illegal. And the people who were working there were afraid to vote in the union after that, because they thought it was like bringing in this violent element into a sophisticated.
Yeah, I mean, you get.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, that's what stopped the movement. And, you know, the union was powerless to fight it because it kept insisting that that wasn't true, and no one, you know, everybody sided with him because he was acting very paternal. I'll take care of you and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we seem to have a problem about, you know, our minds being, you know, hearing lies and being convinced they're truths.
Right, right. Yeah, well, it was interesting. In those days also, I think a lot of people were, you know, it was not the most secure economic times. So people who had jobs wanted to keep their jobs.
Yes.
And you know, so they didn't want anything to kind of, quote, rock the boat. And as a result, oh, wait.
Okay.
Hold on one second, okay.
Oh, certainly.
Okay, go ahead. As a result, they didn't adopt it, and as a result of that, nothing really changed.
Okay. So now you're in the So what you did is at what point did you move? You moved to Florida. You said 12 years ago.
12 years ago. Yes.
And what made you move to Florida? The weather.
Well, my husband and I got really sick of the weather, and as a result, we both decided to start, you know, all over and move to a warmer place. My husband has a lot of family down here, and my mother is down here, so it was good for me to, you know, be down here because my brother and sister still live in different places, like. My sister lives in Maine and my brother lives in New York. So having my sister and brother so far away from my mom, who now is going to be 99 in June.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's still with it and very fun and reads her Kindle and watches movies and is pretty independent, lives at home. And she has round-the-clock aides that help her, you know, because she basically has a balance issue. That's about it. But she's pretty cool for her age. I just saw her yesterday, actually. Yeah, she's amazing. So hopefully
wow.
I inherit some of her good genes.
And I'm curious, was your mother a like women's rights type person? Was she a strong?
My mother was a very
female
strong
influence?
Yeah, she was a great influence because she had her own business. She started her own electrolysis practice and became an entrepreneur and retired, you know, doing that business when she was 70, you know, when her eyesight started not being so great for that job.
Uh-huh.
You have to be looking at things very closely. So,
yeah. So, but in terms
so
of like when
she
was
a role model.
Yeah, when she would talk with you, with you know, as you were growing up, would she kind of say like, "Don't listen to them. Do what you need to do," or, you know. As opposed to, you're a female and this is what you should do.
No, I think, you know, that I was always kind of encouraged to do whatever I wanted to do in terms of being independent and having my own career and deciding what I want to do. And I think that was good. And my mother is still very liberal in that way and very modern in her thinking.
Oh, that's really good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So then you decided, so you were doing public relations, and what got you bored enough to say, I want real estate now?
Well, I decided it was fun because when we were looking for a place to move, we got to see a lot of different places, and I enjoyed looking at the different buildings and learning about, you know, real estate down here in South Florida. And I said, you know, it was kind of a fun thing to do, you know, especially looking at new buildings and seeing what's coming up. And, you know, I said, maybe I should try and do this as another, you know, career on top of the public relations, because public relations is, you know, very difficult here in Florida in many ways, because a lot of the agencies require that you're bilingual. It's almost like this is another Latin country here. So if you're not bilingual, a lot of the agencies, you know, wouldn't hire. And, you know, so most of my clients that I have as a consultant are still in New York, you know, and other parts of the country where English is the primary language. And, you know, here it's a little bit different in Florida. And the culture here is also very kind of who you know, cliquish in that way in terms of getting jobs. And I have been lucky in getting some very exciting nonprofit consulting opportunities down here through connections that I've made since we moved. But it's sort of like, you know, people have to know who you are, and that's how you get these opportunities.
Oh, that's the and now you. So the third thing is you're volunteering for.
Yeah, I'm volunteering for a nonprofit. Actually, it's a think tank that is fighting global anti-Semitism, something that couldn't be more contemporary and timely at this point. And the director moved from New York to Miami, and I had the opportunity to meet him. And the organization is called the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy. And they're trying to incorporate into college curriculums around the world the study of contemporary anti-Semitism, you know, with the hope that if you educate college students about the history and what's happening now, that it will prevent any kind of future genocides.
Oh, that's good to hear. By the way, and send me whatever, and I'll
because it's a really great
do an article, put it in the paper.
Yeah,
up here.
That'd be great. Yeah, because you know, so I'm helping them with publicity and working with their social media and the website, and also trying to find some speaking opportunities for the executive director.
Okay, so in other words. Kind of like to book him someplace.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
correct.
To speak.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to get him, you know, more interviews. I've gotten him interviews, obviously, in a lot of the Jewish press, but it's a little bit more difficult to include him as part of this conversation that's going on right now about anti-Semitism in this country and in Europe on the rise.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
And after this resolution that was passed yesterday, for example, it'd be a good time to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because people are still kind of upset that they didn't make it strictly about anti-Semitism and that they threw the whole kitchen sink in with anti-Semitism in terms of saying, you know, we're against hate. So that's the resolution, that they're against hate, which is great. You know, I support that, but the original concept was to focus on why is anti-Semitism surging in this culture.
Why do you think so, by the way?
Well, I think it's a combination of white supremacy, you know, fostering it, and lack of education. You know, people in Congress should, you know, be a little bit more up on the issue and what is considered anti-Semitism if they're in Congress. There shouldn't have to be excuses for people saying things that they should know are anti-Semitic.
Well, were you aware of what happened at the Queen's Museum?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
This was, no, it wasn't several years ago. Time goes by so quickly that it wasn't several years ago. It was, I'm going to say, definitely within the last 3-4 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
what had happened was that it was the whatever it, Israel's birthday. What mm-hmm. do we? I forgot what it was. Anyway, and they booked, I guess, the place, which you can. They booked the place to have. Oh, I know what it was. Okay, it was it because at the Queen's Museum, that's where they did the whole thing about Israel becoming a state. You're aware of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's what originally it was the, I guess what you call the United Nations, so to speak. That the original United Nations was that building. So
right.
When they talked about it, so that's what they were. What they were doing was having a celebration by reenacting, I guess, the what went on to talk about it. Okay.
Okay.
And this was booked, and the executive director turned around and said, no, we can't have it because it's going to make the Palestinians feel bad, or some, you know, something like that. It's going to, you know, have something regarding the Palestinians, and so they didn't want to do it. And they later, and as they looked into it, because everybody was up in a roar about this, because
mm-hmm.
we're talking something.
So you mean they
historical.
just invited these people who were supposed
yes.
to be there to celebrate Israel.
Right.
Okay.
And we're talking
because
about something.
Because they were concerned about the Palestinians feeling snubbed.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're talking something historical that happened there. We're not talking about, you know, something that
wasn't political. No.
No, it was something historical that
right.
happened to occur there. Okay, so what happened, there was a big uproar from the community. And also to find out the executive director wrote something anti-Israel, et cetera, and then wound up she got fired.
Wow.
Wound up that she got fired, and they did have the event. You know.
Wow.
So that's what happened there. So in Queens, at least, we all got this information within the newspapers. To, you know, to get that this was going on, at least, you know, that got there. It would have been better if it got more publicity about this. I think it was in the Jewish newspapers as well, but, you know, should have gone further because it's just, you know, ridiculous. And then, but they did find out she wrote anti-Israeli comments or whatever. I just wanted to kind of, you know, to throw that in.
Right.
But if it got,
and that was,
you know,
a while
got,
ago. That was a
yeah,
while
this
ago.
Yeah, it was about, I think it was maybe 3 years ago. Wasn't that long, because I know the new executive director hasn't been there for much, I don't even think she's been there for a year. At the Queen's Museum, but I had told the publication that I was writing for is, well, I'm not going there to cover any events while she is the executive director, so get somebody else.
Wow.
And that's, you know.
Good. You know, it's just that I think, like I said before, that there needs to be more education. They did a survey that said something like 60% of the population doesn't even know what the Holocaust means. There's no definite inclusion of history anymore in curriculums in school. You know, everything is much more STEM focused now for jobs. And I think that breeds ignorance and prejudice if you don't teach people about what happened. And you know, and the survivors themselves, you know, do go around and talk to schools, like maybe on Holocaust Remembrance Day. That might be the only connection that they have to the word. And other than that, they don't get taught anything about it. They don't read the literature about it. You know, I think the last really popular movie about the Holocaust was Schindler's List, which was made a long time ago, which I think should at least be something mandatory in the college and high school curriculum, so at least they have some idea of what it means, because otherwise, you know, you have things that are going on in countries like Belgium now, and in England, where you have, actually in England, you have someone who resigned from the Labour Party because she felt that she couldn't stay there with the anti-Semitism that was happening right in Parliament.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, it's really getting worse. And you know, there's a lot of prejudice of, you know, people who support Israel not having a chance to voice their opinions about that on college campuses all over the country, the BDS movement on campuses that wouldn't even allow faculty and scientists from Israel to come to the States and speak or do research because of anti-Israeli thinking and policies at the administrative levels. And I think this is a very bad trend.
What do you think that people should get, that there's a separation between Israel, the country, and Jews? I mean, it doesn't mean
well, that's the thing. You know, I think that you can criticize the policy of a country like Israel without having to be anti-Semitic. The point is that lots of people criticize the Israeli government within Israel. It's a big democracy. They have, I don't know how many different parties. Their Palestinians are totally represented in the government, you know, and there's been a lot of attempts to reach some kind of a peaceful resolution in the Middle East in general that has not been successful. So, you know, you can talk about policies and you could talk about not liking this candidate or that candidate, and that is totally open in the culture and democracy of Israel. Everybody knows that. But at the same time, you have to say that without Israel, there is no Jewish state, and there's no place
right.
where people who might feel persecuted in other countries would feel that they can go. And that's why Israel was created, to serve as a harbor, a safe harbor for Jews around the world. And that's why, you know, they're always welcome to move there if they want to and live there if they're afraid of things getting out of control. And many Jews have left France, for example, and other countries in Europe and moved to Israel, where they feel they don't have to deal with it.
That's interesting.
So, you know, that's the reason Israel was created,
right.
specifically because of the horrors of the Holocaust. And, you know, and it's been the only democracy in the Middle East ever since that the U.S. has always supported and given military support to and political support to. So, you know, this trend against Israel is not a positive sign for Judaism in general, and not necessarily, I don't mean the religion, I mean the population of Jews.
Yeah. I have...
No, and Israel itself is a very secular country. You know, most of the people who live there do not practice their religion and are very secular. There's a small minority of ultra-Orthodox Jews that are getting more representation in the government because they're the ones who are reproducing more than the other Jews. So they have more clout. They're, you know, they they've become very fruitful and multiplied a lot. So they have more representation in the government than a lot of people want them to have. But, you know, the democracy works in the sense that, you know, everything is done by votes and everything is open and they have free elections and it's a totally democratic country.
Yeah, I have relatives that moved to Israel that left. They came to Uruguay. And they left Uruguay and they moved to Israel, or they didn't move to Israel, they moved to the United States.
Right. Yeah, most of my family is in either the United States or in Israel. I had my aunt and uncle who were the ones who allowed us to get the visa to go to Paris in the first place from Romania when my parents were married because they had lived there throughout the war and my uncle had actually been in the French Resistance. But he had to give up, they had to give up their eldest son to live with a Christian family in the country to try to save him from the Nazis and what was going on in France. And they changed their name and got different identity papers so that they didn't have a Jewish name and that they wouldn't get caught while my uncle's working in the resistance. And then after the war, they were able to bring my parents there, which is why my brother and I were born there. But then from there, they moved to the United States, and so did my parents.
I don't even know the history in terms of my grandparents, but one of the things I got, and I was just curious about with you too, when from what I got, three different countries, none of them spoke the language of the country, they spoke Yiddish.
Oh, yeah. Yiddish was a universal language of the Jews of Eastern Europe. And Russia for a very, very long time. And it's very funny because when I went to Queens College, I actually took Yiddish classes, and the Israelis that I met were criticizing me for not studying Hebrew instead of Yiddish. And I wanted to study Yiddish because I felt it was, first of all, it's a very rich cultural language in terms of literature. I wanted to be able to read the original literature of Yiddish writers, and that was what fascinated me about learning about Yiddish. And it was because my parents spoke to themselves in Yiddish when they didn't think that we would understand what they were saying.
We all seem to have that story.
I picked up everything that they were saying and started learning Yiddish, and now I do have a pretty good basic understanding of Yiddish when people speak Yiddish. And it's funny because I'm living in Miami Beach now in an area that has a very Orthodox community that speak Yiddish. And I walk on the boardwalk on the beach with my husband every night and we hear people speaking Yiddish. It's very funny how it kind of has gotten here to South Florida. But that's probably one of the only cultures that is keeping Yiddish alive. By the way, if you haven't seen Shtisel on Netflix, you have to see it.
Oh, okay.
It's great. It's great. Because it's kind of a behind-the-scenes look at the Orthodox living in Israel, actually, the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredi, as they call them. And it's a very contemporary, very interesting series that was like the number one show in Israel because the people living in Israel didn't know how these people lived either or what was going on with them. So, and the characters are all very well developed and it's a really interesting drama. It's kind of a soap opera, but you like it.
Oh, okay. I did see Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish.
Oh, wow. That must have been great.
Or did you know about that?
I think I read about it, yeah.
Yeah, it was, for me, I thought it was the best rendition of Fiddler I've ever seen anywhere.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Great. And did you understand it? Did they have subtitles?
Yeah, they put up subtitles, both Russian and English.
Oh, great.
But I haven't seen it. What happened is it did so well at the Museum of Jewish Heritage that they brought it to Midtown Manhattan in an off-Broadway.
Wow.
And right now I got that it was supposed to be I don't know what the run was, but they extended it already to September.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, if I come to New York, I'm going to try to get tickets for it.
It's, and as I said, it wasn't just because it was in Yiddish, but the whole performance itself was excellent. And this was directed by Joel Grey, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. I love Joel Grey.
Yes.
Must be great.
So I was going to attempt to learn Yiddish, but my computer doesn't want to. My computer's not helping for me to do it. Workman's Circle was going to be teaching it to me.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
So I guess when the weather gets better, maybe I can, you know, go there into Manhattan and do it. But in the meantime, I had found something online where you can learn Yiddish and it doesn't cost you.
Wow. That's,
so I'm trying to do
if
that.
If you find something, so let me know, and you know, I'd be interested.
Oh, I'll give you the website. I made a list of so far things I had learned. Like, first thing is to speak is redden.
Redden.
That was the
first
thing. You know?
That's good.
And to want is velen.
Velen. Mm. I heard a terrific singer singing in Yiddish with a klezmer band, and she's fantastic. When I find the record, I'll let you know who it is, and you should get it. It's really, really good. She's terrific.
I do remember in growing up that because my mother came from an Orthodox family. So,
oh, really?
I guess that's why we had records in with Yiddish songs. So
well,
I would, you know, I would hear that all the time.
Oh, yeah. This one is called, the name of the singer is Eleanor Risa, and she's fantastic, and she plays with the Klezmer Brass All-Stars.
Uh-huh.
And the name of the album is Vilde Mechai, which means wild ecstasy.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll send me the name, and I'll see if I could, you know, get a link or something.
Yeah, you would love it. You would love it.
There's a. By the way, distance wise, how far are you from Boca Raton?
About an hour by car.
There's a group coming in. I have to get it. Kohl's, KOL something. I think they're Israeli. It's a whole big dance singing kind of thing that I can get, and they're going to be in Boca.
Oh, yeah, send it to me. Yeah, it's not that far. And
yeah,
actually, I did work for a group that's also based in Boca, and I went to a couple of their meetings. It's called Next Generations, and it's for the second generation of survivors of the Holocaust.
Oh, okay.
And I did public relations for them as well.
Oh, and I got my relatives in Boca.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Who keep saying,
so they
come
have
on
a
down
very
here.
First,
come sit.
Yeah, come on down, yeah. It's a nice area, actually. I like Boca a lot. It's very pretty.
Yeah, I will do my best. It's just physically hard for me to get around.
To get around. Do you still have your cats, by the way?
Oh, God, of course, yes.
Of course.
I'm putting them up today, a picture of them. I'm going to be doing this thing on Facebook of, you know, saying good morning to everybody and maybe what doing or something ridiculous. It's really, I'm almost jealous these two cats, the cats are, they're twins. They're identical twins. If I don't see their, if I don't see their face, I don't know which one is which.
Wow, that's incredible.
And they so cuddle up to each other constantly.
Oh, so sweet.
I know.
Well,
even,
I used to have cats in New York, and then when I moved here, there are outdoor cats on the boardwalk that I feed with my husband every night when we go walking. So a few of them are kind of like my outdoor adopted cats that follow me around, and they come to the front door and they bang on the door when they want to eat.
Do they let them? Do they let you pet them?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Some of them are extremely affectionate. Yeah, I've never tried to pick any of them up, but they love to be pet and they love to be scratched and things like that. And they're very domesticated. They're very sweet, and you know, some of them are still very skittish and run away. If you know, you have to give them the food while you're not standing right next to them because they're afraid of whatever. But most of them are very domesticated at this point and trust you and know that you're coming to just give them food and you're not going to do anything to them. But they have a lovely lifestyle. Very nice, yeah. Hold on one second, okay? I have another call.
Sure.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm not going to take a break because, you know, she'll be right back on the air. I don't want to play a commercial. And then she comes on and going, what's that? That's not Merle.
Hi.
But anyway, what I'm going to be, I want to get back to that it's International Women's Day.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. So it's International Women's Day, and so tell us what you think about it.
Well, first of all, I'm a past president of New York Women in Communications, and I've always been very supportive of women supporting women in work and in life in general. And I think having a holiday to celebrate how far women have come in our country and throughout the world is a great thing because, after all, you know, women have made tremendous strides in the workforce and government and all aspects of different employment and are contributing equally to men in high-powered positions and, you know, throughout the workforce. So I think it's a great celebration, and I think that young girls today aspire to do anything they want, and there are no boundaries in terms of even sports, like you know, with women's football.
Right.
And in all other competitive sports. And women are basically free to become whoever they want to be in this society. So I support that. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful, and I think that it's a great thing to celebrate every year.
Did you get the final thing with the New York Sharks? Did you get how it all ended?
No.
Well, first of all, Andrew sold the team.
Okay.
She finally decided she had enough. She sold the team. So it's now the last season, okay, they wind up taking the championship game, which is not the first time. They won it in like 2001 or 2002, rather. And this was they haven't won it since. So they wound up taking the championship game. And then they went on to play in England. They were doing this international thing. So they went on to play in England, and they took that championship game.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So they ended up with double trophies to end the New York Sharks.
Wow. Wow.
So it's good to know that these, you know, they all, well, they made history. You
That's it. Well, it's kind of in a sense ironic that it all happened after she sold the team.
Well, this was the last she sold the team. No, it wasn't after. She had sold
it
the
was
team,
before.
But this was
oh,
the last
right.
season.
Last game. Right.
Last right. The last thing they were doing before was being taken over by, you know, another place.
Right.
Another,
right.
You know, other people. So, okay. Hang on 1 second, okay? Or
sure,
talk or
I think
whatever.
You're getting another call? Okay. I mean, I guess we'll wait till Merle can come back. She might be getting another call in. So hopefully she'll be back soon. Are you back?
Yeah, back.
Okay.
Well, somebody
right.
at the door delivering. You ask for a delivery time. They ask you for a delivery time. I said between 1 and 4.
Right.
The guy's there. Okay. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Are we going to wrap up soon? Cause it's
oh, yeah. So
o'clock?
that's what I want to do is I want to wrap up.
Okay. Great. It was so great talking to you, Merle. Had a great
and please
time.
send the information to me.
I will.
And, you know, I'll get it. It will be something I'll write about in the paper, especially
perfect.
Like any quotes you want about whatever you want to quote about it yourself, personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay? All
fantastic.
Great. All right.
It's great,
great
to talk
talking
to you,
with you.
Have a wonderful
and,
day. And
yeah,
let's
you too.
Continue to celebrate women.
Yes, I certainly will.
Okay, great. Bye,
take
Merle.
Care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm now going to, end the show. I got to go find, yes. So, happy Women's Day. Let's keep it strong. So, everybody, have a great day, evening, or whatever, whenever you're listening.